Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Program Manager, WCF, for the Microsoft Corporation, Yavor Georgiev.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you guys? Great. I know Jesse said it's hard to follow after Scott, so imagine what it's like to actually follow after Scott and Jesse back to back. But I'm glad you're here, and we have some great content. So what we're here today is, the reason we're here today is to learn about web services and Silverlight, how to build a web service to consume it from Silverlight, and then how to consume an existing web service that you might already have from a Silverlight client. We have an agenda that starts with building a very simple WCF service. And after that, we'll take a little break, talk about WCF, WCF RIA services, kind of contextualize the two technologies, where to use which one. We'll take a little time to talk about debugging and how to set up security for a WCF service. And we'll wrap up by talking about a public or a REST service, how to consume an existing public REST service, such as Twitter or Facebook. But before we get going, could we just do a quick show of hands, see how many of you are actually familiar with WCF? So, okay. Wow, excellent. Almost the entire room. How many of you have actually used WCF in a real app? Oh, wow. Okay, so some of you might want to go get lunch early. But we have a lot of folks on the webcast joining us as well. So I think I have great content for both you here in the room and people out there. So with that, let's actually jump into our first demo here. What we see here, this should be very similar to where Jesse left off in the previous talk. So it's the same book club app with the data binding set up. However, at this point, what we'll notice about this app is that all the objects that Jesse were using were actually local. They were all inside his Silverlight application package, which is really not the way to go with a Silverlight app. What you really want is to bring in the data as you need it from a remote web service. So that's what we're going to go do first. So let's jump into Visual Studio. In my Solution Explorer here, you'll notice this first Silverlight project is very similar to what Jesse had. And so right down here, we have the data folder where Jesse had all his types. So for example, this book type should be very familiar. We have the same properties, things like author, ISBN, description, published. So this is what Jesse had, and this is what he used to set up data binding. So let's go ahead and figure out how to move that folder to the server. So we're going to close Silverlight for now and move into the web application project. And here, we need to first create a place to store the data. So we're going to go ahead, use Entity Framework, and actually create a local database and an entity model to actually model the entities we want to have in our application. And this should look familiar. This is the same book type. It has the same properties that Jesse had, except now this is actually abstracting away a database that's living in the service. And a quick note on Entity Framework, for those of you that aren't familiar, Entity Framework is a way to kind of talk to a database, but instead of using SQL commands and things like that, you actually work in terms of objects and entities and properties. So it's a much more natural way to work with a database. And to prove to you that these are actually real types, let me go ahead and actually go to the code behind right here for the EF model. And we can actually go and find that same, wrong code behind. Right here, we can just navigate over to the book class. And you notice, again, you'd expect this, the same properties. So it's an actual type. It's an actual type that we can use as though it's actually coming from the database. Great, so we have the data. Now let's build the service. The first thing we'll do is, If I were to build this from scratch, I'd actually go ahead and right-click here and go Add New Item. And then select, under the Silverlight menu, I'd select basically New WCF, Enable WCF. And this is the starting point for creating a web service for Silverlight. And this will create just a regular WCF service, but with a binding information pre-configured. And the binding is the way that we tell WCF what protocols to speak, what transports to use, etc. Now, in this case, I'm actually not going to go through with this because I already have my service set up. This is the book service class right here. I'll jump into the code behind and talk briefly about the implementation. So all of you are familiar with WCF, so this should not be new. We have the service contract, we have the operation contract. We have two operations in this case, get categories and get books by category. And this is similar to, the get books is similar to what Jesse had in his demo, except in his case it was local. So that's great. Now let's actually look at the first one first. Here you'll see I'm instantiating the context. And so the context is entity frameworks generate a class that sits between me and the database. So when I talk to the context, I talk in terms of types. I give it a type, I remove a type, I delete a type, I update a type. And then it transforms that into commands to the database or whatever data tier sits underneath. So I use the context to actually go to the categories table in the database, and I just return the list of categories as a list. So this part is pretty straightforward. Let me draw your attention to this setting here. Lazy loading enabled equals false. So the entity framework context will sometimes try to do lazy loading. It'll load some entities and then other dependent entities later. But in a web service context, I really want to get everything now and return it right away. So it's important to set this to false to avoid some errors you might get. Let's look at the next method, get books by category. This one is a little bit more complex. This time we'll actually use link to query this collection of books. So books is just a collection of book objects that came from the context. Again, that's proxying the database. And then we are going to write a where clause here. So this is link. We say return any book where the category ID matches the category ID that I expect from that method. So this is pretty straightforward, and this is a very simple example of link, but this can go arbitrarily complex. You can chain multiple where clauses. There's a bunch of other clauses that you can use. Basically, anything you're familiar with in SQL, you can. Link has a sort of a language equivalent of that. So that's our service, very straightforward. So one other thing I want to point out here before we move to the client is the web config file, and that's something that the Silverlight enabled template actually generated for me. So in this particular case, webconfig, it's pre-generated and already has the binding information preset here. So this is all familiar to you. You'll notice the binding is the binary over HTTP, and that's the binding we prefer for Silverlight clients. That's the optimal binding to use. So with that, our service is ready. Now let's move to the client. Let's close out some of this stuff. Move over to the client. Now, you're all familiar with the gesture to actually reference a WCF service, and that is? Anyone? Add service reference. Right, huh? You knew that. We go add service reference, and then we hit discover. It'll show us all the services that are in the solution, and I can pick whichever one I like. However, I've already done this, and I have my service reference down here. So let's go ahead and actually open it up and see what's inside the service reference. You'll notice first we have the book service client, and this is the proxy. This is the local client-side representation service. And in the proxy itself, we expect to see the same methods we defined in our service, right? We had get categories and get books by category. So here's our get books by category, get categories. Now notice there's an async tacked on at the end, so we'll talk about that when we get there. Great, so we have our proxy, the add service reference generated. It also generated another piece here, which is this config file. And you can think of the client config file as the client equivalent of web config, and that's again where the WCF binding information is stored. In this case, again, HTTP transport, binary encoding. So this is great. We have our service reference set up. Now let's actually see how we use it in the actual code behind. I know I might be violating some of the best practices that Jesse showed in his previous talk, but please bear with me. So we first start by instantiating our proxy right here. We connect these two events here, and that might look unfamiliar to some of you who might be used to synchronous networking. So if I try to say, you know, I might expect to write proxy and then just say get categories. And my get categories isn't there. Instead, I get these two methods. I get an async method and a completed event. And so this is not what I expect. This is, I expected a synchronous method, but there's a good reason why we only support asynchronous networking in Silverlight. Silverlight, you may have heard, it's all in the UI thread. So when you run something, anything that I run in the XAML code behind it actually goes right up on the UI thread. And if I make a blocking networking call, which might take a couple of seconds to return the data, it might actually block my UI, and customers are not going to be able to, customers of my application might not be able to get around. So we never want to actually block it. What we want to do is we want to register a completed event, which is going to fire when the web service returns. And then async is how I initiate the call. And I've already pre-configured this. So I've connected my two completed handlers here. And let's see where we actually make the call. So when they navigate to the page, we go get categories async to populate that first leftmost panel with categories. And then when they actually click on a category, I fire off the call to get the books for that category. So when the category list gets returned from the web service, we get this handler. In the handler itself, we set the item source property of a list box in the UI. So these categories get data bound to the UI. And of course, there's a better way to do this. Same here, when we get the list of books returned back, so get books by category, we'll return this handler. Inside the handler itself, we go ahead and we set the result. And that's that rightmost panel. We set up the data binding there as well. So at this point, we're actually ready. Our client is set up. And I can go ahead and actually just run this.
Can you click on error? On completed or on error?
Excuse me?
Can you click on error? Is that not
successful? Yeah, you can check on error. Yeah, that's a great point. So actually, I do this here. In the results, that's a great point. I actually omitted that. Thank you. The question is, how do I check for errors? And so here I actually have the event args, which is what it contains the result of the web service call, has two properties. It has the result, which is hopefully the result from the web service call, but it has another property called error. And it's always good practice to actually check the error first before you try to access result, because the result might be null. So you check the error. And you make sure that the error is null in this case. And if there's an error, you might be able to handle the error gracefully by showing some UI, asking the user for more information, something like that. So that's how you handle errors. Let's go ahead and run this. It's pretty straightforward. You saw it in the beginning. Great. So let's pick a category. That makes that first web service call. The first web service call happened transparently when we navigated. This makes the second web service call, which loads the books. And then this is just data binding from this point on. Great. So let's head over back to our slides. What you saw, let's just recap, is how to build a simple service. And the three things you need to take away are, first, Silverlight-enabled WCF service. That's how you get started. The second thing is entity framework to actually generate, to take your database, generate a model off of it, and use the entities. And number three, the add service reference gesture to generate the client proxy. Great. So with that, we're going to move on and talk briefly about kind of putting WCF and WCF RIA services in context. Like you saw, WCF is a general purpose framework for building web services. You can build an arbitrary service contract. You can name an arbitrary operation, whatever method you like, you can write, whatever objects you want to pass, you can do that. So it's very flexible. And you can describe almost any pattern using WCF. So in addition to that, also I showed you the webconfig. And in webconfig, you can specify different bindings, different protocols. You can do HTTP, TCP, different encodings. Depends on what you like. And again, there's a lot of flexibility there. And as a result of that, we can support pretty much any client. We can go ahead and support Silverlight clients. We support Windows Phone. We support even a JavaScript client if you'd like. You write your service logic once, and then because we support a variety of bindings, a variety of protocols, you can go ahead and use the service from any client. So you're kind of going in with a services mentality. I'm building a service to be consumed maybe by many clients. And this is great. It's very powerful. It's very flexible. But sometimes it can just be too hard. It can be hard to get all the configuration settings right. And if you're trying to do just a really targeted scenario, it might be overkill for what you're trying to do. And that's where WCF RIA services comes in. If you're doing a forms over data application, and let me take a step aside and talk about what it is. But if you're doing a forms over data application, RIA services is your choice. Forms over data starts with the database, where you have a bunch of entities and tables. Then you build a data tier on top of it using Entity Framework, for example. And then what you want, ideally, is to be able to edit that data tier in a client application in something like a data grid in Silverlight or a list box. And you expect certain things to just flow through naturally from the database all the way to your client. Things like validation rules, you expect that to flow through. Things like change tracking, you expect any changes you make on the client to get batched together and sent back and submitted to the database. And it's a very standard pattern. You don't want to have to re-implement it all over again every time you want to do this. And that's where Rhea Services is really productive. It has great tooling, and you can be off the ground in just a couple of minutes. It would take you a week to write, or actually much longer, to write this well in plain WCF. And there's a great talk by Dan right after lunch, and he's going to dive deeply into WCF Rhea Services and cover that. But for now, let's stick to WCF and move on. Our next topic is debugging. And so this is where this is going to start getting a little bit more interesting for you, because you've all used WCF and you've probably had issues trying to set it up. So here's my little debugging checklist that I like to share with people. The first thing we want to do always is make sure the service activates. So go ahead and browse to that service in the browser. See that blue page come up that says, you know, here I am and I'm running correctly. That's always the first step. The second step is to make sure add service reference, that command actually completed successfully. You can look at the code proxy that got generated just like I double-clicked it. Make sure all the methods you expect are there. Check for any errors and warnings in Visual Studio to make sure the service reference completed correctly. And beyond that, you know the design time is correct. Now at runtime, things might happen, and so you might want to actually get a little bit more of a error flow between the service and the client, and that's a big problem. A lot of the time, WCF is actually throwing an exception. There's some problem somewhere in the WCF stack, but that exception is never actually reaching the client. And we'll go into details on number three. We'll show how to enable errors. Number four, Fiddler. Of course, Fiddler is an HTTP debugger that's going to sit between the WCF application and Silverlight, and it's going to capture traffic and let you see the messages going through. So that's probably one of the most powerful ways to track the traffic between the two. And the last thing is, of course, WCF tracing. WCF tracing, you just turn it on the service, and it will write out to a file everything it does, and it will capture every single message that goes in or out. And that's great. You can just look at that file later. It's a replay of what happened. You can find any exceptions that were thrown. So that's also another very powerful way. But let's jump in to the demo here about how to debug a service. Let's intentionally create a problem here in our web config. We know Entity Framework is talking to a database, and any database will have a connection string. So let's go ahead and actually introduce a mistake in the connection string. So right here, for example, I'll mess up this name. And let's run this application and see what's our actual experience of debugging this. And remember, the service might be running on a completely different machine than the client. So this first exception comes from Entity Framework. It's in our service, and it says I could not open the provider, which makes sense, right? And this is pretty informative. It tells us, you know, the database, there's something wrong with the database. But we might not ever see this because this is on the service. What we see on the client is this infamous communication exception, which all of you are familiar with. And so, yeah, it's really, I mean, how do you debug this, right? Like, not found, not very useful. So let's see how to make this better. And there's actually two easy steps that every Silverlight developer should know. Let's go up here. And the first thing, we'll go in our Silverlight application. And before we make any calls to the service, we'll actually use this alternative networking stack. So Silverlight has two networking stacks. One goes through the browser, one goes through the client. And in some cases, and the client in this case is the operating system. And in some cases, the client stack might be more powerful, give you more features for what you need. And in this case, actually, it helps us detect WCF error messages better. So let's turn on this one line here, and let's go over to the service. That's where the second change is. We go back to our familiar web config, to the WCF section here, and we'll find this one setting, include exception detail and faults. And so that, what that means is that by default, WCF will not give you the full error information whenever something goes wrong. It's not going to send it back to the client, and that's a security measure. But for debugging purposes, we want to turn this on. This is like custom errors in ASP.NET, you might be familiar. So You'll just get back the full stack trace. But you should remember to always turn this off once you're back from testing into production. On the service, we get the same exception. Now on the client, you see it's a completely different story. We get this fault exception. And if we drill in a little bit, it has a detail property. And the detail property is actually really great. It has entity exception, the type of the exception, the full stack trace, the message. Hell, it even has the inner exception. We have everything in here. And so all of a sudden, we just made these two small changes, and now we can actually debug our service in a much more productive way. Great. Excellent. So let's go ahead and undo this, because like I said, it's only for testing. So let's set this back to false. And I always forget to do this, but I want to fix my broken connection string. Otherwise, none of my demos are going to work after this. Let's change this back. And if we go in the client, we'll switch back to the regular networking stack, because we're honestly not really using any of the capabilities of the new one. So let's comment out this one line. Great. So here we covered debugging. And let's head back to our slides here. The two takeaways are, if you're using the clients, well, you should be using the client stack. Turn on the client stack. That's this way. If you'd like to use the browser stack, which is the default one, there's still a way to get it to work. And there's a link in the slide where you can go and follow and read up. It's a little bit more complex. So that's the first change. The second change is on the service. Make sure you turn on include exception, detail, and faults. At that point, we're actually done. And this is done. We're done with the easy content. So now we're going to jump into a more advanced subject. How to actually secure the service. And this is where we see a lot of trouble and a lot of questions. How do I actually deploy my service and secure it in different contexts? So first, we're going to tackle intranet deployment. And this is a deployment inside of an enterprise. This is very similar to what we have here at Microsoft. You have a bunch of employees, and their accounts are stored in a central domain server. And each employee is part of this domain. When they log into their machine, when they log in, they establish their identity. And then any application running within their Windows session can get that identity. So that's the scheme. And in this case, both the client and the service are implicitly connected to the directory server. So they can authenticate a user through something like a Kerberos or NTLM handshake. And we call this Windows authentication. It's very well understood. So this is great. It works really well inside of an enterprise. However, not all of us are inside of an enterprise. In fact, most of our Silverlight applications get deployed to the web to be consumed by clients that are not on our domain. So in that case, we have a different authentication scenario, and we tackle it differently here. For this, we actually use ASP.NET web forms or cookies. And the way this works is you have, you see the big machine in the middle. So this is all in the same web application. We have ASP.NET, and ASP.NET has a store of users, roles, and things like that. So the usual handshake here is that a client will first register. Excuse me. A client will first register in that store, will provide username and password, and then when they come back to log in, the ASP.NET is going to ask them for their credentials. The client will provide their credentials. They'll get a cookie back, and then the browser will take that cookie and hide it away. Store it away, and then every time they try to browse to a page within the same ASP.NET website, any protected resource on that website will actually ask for the cookie. And if the client is able to provide the cookie, it's gonna be authenticated. So you're gonna get the protected behavior in this particular case. And so in Silverlight, we can't get the cookie directly through because we don't want to have a separate ASP.NET page to log in with our credentials. So we actually are going to build a little authentication service that we can use from within Silverlight to provide our credentials. And then we can use anything in the website. Now, one thing to note here is that we have to use encrypted traffic, HTTPS, both when we talk to the authentication service and when we talk to the actual book service in this case. And the reason for that is that on the first leg, we're actually sending our credentials. And we don't want that in plain text. On the second leg, we're actually sending the authentication cookie. And that somebody could potentially steal that off of our request and replay our request, attaching the same cookie. And the ASP.NET application would pretend it's actually us. So we want to have HTTPS on both sides here. So let's go ahead and demo these two scenarios. And let's start with Windows authentication. The first change I'll make is I'll go ahead in my web config, and I'll switch to the WCF section again. And we'll configure the WCF binding for Windows authentication. So I'll go here inside of my HTTP transport, and I'll say authentication scheme equals negotiate. Oops. Great, so now WCF is configured for Windows Auth. Now, there's one step here which I'm hiding away, which is the fact that IIS, which is where this is actually hosted, also needs to be configured for Windows Auth. So we need to go back into our IIS manager and turn on Windows authentication on that website. And this is a step done already, but before I deployed this. So at this point, WCF is ready for Windows Auth. Now, let's make this a little bit more interesting and go back into our service code. And we can add some authorization logic based on who the current user is. So back here in the get books by category, what we want to do is we want to hide away the book description if we don't like the user who's currently logging in. So we'll add this little chunk of code here to do that. And you notice what I'm doing is actually very stupid, and you should never actually do this. I'm actually looking. I have hard-coded my own domain credential in here. So this is who I am for the Redmond domain. And so I will check if it is me. And if it is me, I will actually return the book description. If it's not, I'll replace it with this not available string. And this is, like I said, not the right way to do this. The right way to do this would be to use Active Directory groups, something like that, where you can create a group for users with similar sets of permissions. And then you could check here the user who's logged in is part of a given group. And even that's not the best way. There's even better ways yet. And there's a link at the end of my slide deck on that. But this is simple for a demo, and it shows you really clearly what you're getting. So I'm authenticated. I know exactly who it is. So with this, I think I'm ready to go. I can go ahead and run. And hopefully, when I log in, this machine is logged into the Redmond domain, so it knows it's me already. Hopefully, when I go through this, I'll get the full description, because it should be me. There you go. Now let's try to pretend we're another user that's not me and see if it will fail. So I'll do a little trick here. I'll launch IE, but I'll pretend I'm a different user. And I happen to have a hidden user on the Redmond domain. It's a log account. So I'll just log in as that user. Great. So now here's IE, and it thinks I'm somebody else. So let's go over to our bookshelf app and see what the behavior is. So I had access to this, but at this point, my authorization logic kicked in, and it was able to remove that description. So here we go. We've got Windows Auth set up. So that's the first part of our demo. At this point, let's move on and do the second scenario, which is the ASP.NET Auth, which is actually a little bit trickier to set up. But before I do that, let me actually go ahead and undo the changes I made here. So we'll get rid of this. And I'll go back to my service, and I'll comment out the authorization logic. Great, so now we're ready to set up ASP.NET authentication. The first thing I'm going to do is, like I said, we need that authentication service. We can pass our credentials from within Silverlight and then get a cookie back. So you'll see I've added it right here, and some of you might say, well, why do I have to write an authentication service? Why isn't that provided? And actually, it is provided. If you double-click the implementation, there's actually nothing in here. There's no implementation. The implementation actually lives in the system.web DLL, and it's already provided by ASP.NET. And I realize some of you may have seen it, but many people don't know about this, the fact that there's a built-in authentication service, and it uses WCF. So I've added my SVC file. It's a regular WCF service, so I need to go to webconfig and make sure I configure the binding and all that. So here's my section, webconfig, for the authentication service. Let's look at the binding. So I'm using a custom binding, and actually it's binary HTTP. It's actually the same binding that my application endpoint is using as well. And so remember I said we should actually be using HTTPS for both of these to protect the credentials and to protect the cookie. So let's actually change our binding, switch from HTTP to HTTPS, and that's as easy as just adding an extra S here. So we're switching to the HTTPS transport. The last thing we need to do is actually turn on ASP.NET Forms authentication. So we'll go into the system web section and add this one line. So at that point, our authentication service is ready, our web config is ready. Let's go in and add our authorization logic in our service. And the authorization logic is going to try to do the same thing, basically see if I have a given user. In this case, my ASP.NET user is called test. It's not my domain user. It's a different user that ASP.NET knows about, and he's called test. So in this case, if the user who's logged in is test, I'll give him the full description of the books. If not, he'll get the error message. Now, you'll see I had two separate sets of authorization logic here. I have the one for Windows authentication, one for ASP.NET authentication. And I'm doing this terrible pattern as well where I'm actually hard-coding usernames inside my code. So there's actually a framework out there. It's a framework for WCF that lets you really do authentication and authorization well. And some of you might be familiar with it. It's called the Windows Identity Foundation. And so that lets you, for example, write a consistent set of authorization rules here based on things like groups or claims. And that's really the correct way to do it. Unfortunately, it's a little bit harder to set up, and I couldn't do it in a simple demo. But if you really want to do this in production, you should look at Windows Identity Foundation. And there's a link to them at the end of my deck. But with that, our server side is set up. Now, let's move to the client. So remember the handshake, right? Silverlight needs to first call the authentication service, then get the cookie, then call our actual book service. And Silverlight currently is trying to call our book service directly, so it's never going to get the cookie. So let's change that. First, how do we talk to the authentication service? Well, it's a regular WCF service, like I said. So what do? Again, add service reference. So I've already added a reference here to the authentication service, and it generated the proxy for that. And I even have here, I generated the config for it as well. And right there, here's the endpoint definition. So this works great. There's one change in HTTPS. Remember, I switched the binding to HTTPS everywhere. So I'm just going to add S here in both places. Great. So now our proxy is configured for use. Let's go ahead and actually use the proxy. So I'll jump into book view. And here's the proxy. Here's where I actually initiate it and use it. You'll notice I'm connecting the completed event, and that's again the async pattern that we talked about. So in the completed event, this is the event that's going to fire when my login attempt either succeeds or fails, and in that login handler, in the login completed event handler, I'll be able to know if authentication was successful. So there, I can actually then call my other web service from within this completed handler. The next step here is sort of a cheat. I'm actually calling logout, and this just makes sure that there aren't any cookies that are cached from me running the demo previously on my machine. Normally, the way you would do this, you'd actually have some UI. The proxy itself has I think, three methods. It has a method, is the user authenticated, so you can know. It has a login method, and it has a logout method. So normally, you'd build sort of UI where when they first come to the page, it'd say, please type in your credentials. Then when they come back, you can check if you have the cookie. If you do, you'll say logged in, welcome, and you can provide their username up there. And then there's going to be a logout button, which is going to trigger this on the proxy. But here, I'm cheating and making it simple. Great, so let's see where we actually call the authentication service. And we do that in onNavigated too. So when we first get to the page, we call that service. And so here are our credentials, right? And so again, terrible practice. Normally this would be in the UI in a little text box somewhere where the user can type it in. But in this case, I've hard-coded it. So these are the correct credentials for the test user. Now let's go and find that completed handler where login either succeed or fail. And it's right down here. And you notice I'm checking if there's an error, so if there was an error talking to the login service, or if the result was false. And the result will be false if the credentials are incorrect. So in this case, I'll say authentication failed, continuing unauthenticated. I'll just alert the user that their credentials were wrong. But actually, our service, remember, the logic will work regardless. If the user is not authenticated, it'll just give me less information. So I can actually safely continue here and just call the service itself, even if I didn't have the cookie. So with this, I think I'm all set up to actually run this. So let's go ahead and give it a try. Excuse me? We can talk later. Great, so this is correct credentials, so I should be able to get the full description, and I do. Great, let's go ahead and actually scroll the credentials. So I'll go back up here, put the wrong password in, run it again. And I should, I get the alert saying wrong credentials, but I should still be able to get the book description. It's just going to say not available. Great, so that's it for this demo. So we showed two pretty interesting authentication scenarios, one for internet deployment and one for intranet deployment. I hope this is useful. Let's move on to our next topic and our last topic, which is how to consume an existing web service out there. And this is very common. In today's web, we have public web services, and we usually call these REST web services or RESTful services. Examples here are things like Facebook, Twitter, all these sort of more modern web APIs, and they're usually implemented over plain HTTP, and they usually speak lightweight formats such as JSON, XML, or their syndication feeds, right? And subscribe to a service if it has updated data. So that's one set of services, and Silverlight is equipped to work with these just fine. So for these, you wouldn't do add service reference because there's no metadata. This can't describe itself. In this case, you just use it very manually. You new up a web client class, which is your basic tool for sending HTTP requests. You new up a web client, and then you just send manually requests to a given URI. When you get the data back, you can use, depending on what the data is, you can use any of these classes I have on the slide to actually parse the result. So if the result is JSON, you can go ahead and use JSON value if you want a dictionary-style way of working with the JSON data. Or you can use the serializer if you're interested in getting a type and you know, basically newing up an instance of a type and populating the properties of it with the JSON data. And that might be useful if you're using data binding. It's great if you have a type for data binding. That helps. XML, we have XElement, against for dictionary style handling. And then we have XML serializer if you want types. And then for RSS and Atom, we have a typed class syndication feed. You just parse the feed into it, and you can data bind to any of its properties, like I'll show later. Now, the second group of services here, so this is, imagine a scenario where you come into an enterprise and they say build a Silverlight client for our existing HR application. Chances are that application is probably a SOAP application sitting there. It's a SOAP service. And so how would you go about using that? Well, all the WCF services I've showed you so far, they're all SOAP-based. So I did add service reference to talk to WCF services. You can do add service reference to talk to an arbitrary SOAP service. So if you see a WSDL file or anything like that, it's very easy to go ahead and just say add service reference, provide that link, and see if it works. Chances are it may, if it's a fairly simple SOAP service. If it's a more complex SOAP service, it might fail, and usually you'll see in the window, it'll say endpoint is not supported by Silverlight. And in the enterprise, that might be common. You might see things like really hardcore security or reliable messaging transactions, things that don't necessarily make sense in Silverlight or are not supported at this point. So in that case, you might consider just building a wrapper WCF service that because WCF in .NET actually has the full capabilities to do transactions, reliable messaging, security, all those things work in .NET. So when you write your WCF service, you can proxy the traffic to the actual SOAP service, and that will work. And then when you're talking from Silverlight to the Silverlight-enabled service, then you can speak sort of a simpler protocol. You can strip away some of the features. So let's go ahead and do a demo. So we'll show the first case, the public REST, how I can go ahead and use that. Let's go ahead and close. Actually, yeah, let me correct my credentials because I'll get the annoying pop-up. Great. So let me first run the app. So you notice this thing, this little widget here in the bottom left. That wasn't in John's demo earlier or in Jesse's demo, so I added this specifically. And what it does is if I go ahead and I click on a given category, it'll go to the New York Times public REST service, and it'll get an RSS feed with articles on that given subject. So if I click business, it's going to go ahead and bring all the business articles. If I go travel, it's going to do travel. And so I can go ahead and just select one of these, click it. I've set data binding, So this is expected, actually, because IE attempts to debug everything. So, but here's the New York Times. And it worked, basically. I have a data binding set up. So when the results from the REST service call came back from the RSS feed, I use that data binding to hook it up to UI, and then when they click, they're sent off to the right page. So let's see in our code behind how we actually implemented it, and it's very straightforward. So I go ahead and I instantiate my web client here. Down here, I new it up. Actually, this is where I instantiated it. Sorry. And then I, again, use the asynchronous networking pattern. That's pervasive across WCF, the lower-level HTTP classes. You're never going to find a synchronous networking class in Silverlight. So again, I have open read. Open reads is going to get a stream of data from the remote service and bring it back. And I can decide what to do with that stream of data, and I'll do that in the completed handler. Let's see where we actually call open read. In this selection change handler, when they pick a new category in that list, I go ahead and fire off the request. So you'll see here, I make the call open read async. This is the address of the New York Times REST service. And I do some magic to make the feed names match up with what they expect. But this is pretty straightforward. I call open read. And then let's actually look at the handler. You notice e.result again is going to contain the stream containing the results from the web service. I actually go ahead and parse that into a syndication feed class. And so the syndication feed class knows all about the semantics of RSS and how that works. And then again, I use data binding to hook it up to UI. And then UI, it's already pre-configured. So for example, I've used data binding to set up a hyperlink so you can click on it. And with that, I'm actually going to be pretty much done for today. So let's jump back to the slides one last time. Thank you very much for coming in today. I appreciate you sitting through this talk. Here's some great resources that you might want to look at. My Twitter handles on there are our Silverlight Web Services blog, where you can read all about WCF. And there are a couple of good pointers, the documentation, the forum, and the link to Identity Foundation, which is the framework you can use to actually set up the authorization rules that I did so poorly. You can do it right if you click that link. And that's it for me. Thank you very much. I think you're off to lunch now. Thank you.